Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
You're welcome back. So later in this hour, we're going to hear from Conor Murray about coping with the disappointment of their Champions Cup semi-final defeat and looking ahead to the Pro 14 semi-final preliminary game.
Is that semi-final qualifier is what they're officially
called. Semi-final qualifier, not a quarter-final, a semi-final qualifier against Edinburgh.
It'd be a quarter-final if it was like the Connacht Third Leinster Championship.
If there was eight teams, but there's only six teams.
I know, but if it was still in the Connacht right. Championship, they'd still call it a quarter-final.
The Connacht Championship is a quarter-final, two quarter-finals this weekend.
Two quarter-finals, yeah, there you go.
And there's what, seven teams?
Yeah.
Quick calculation. Yeah, so Conor Murray coming up on that. Josh van der Fleer as well on his injury and when he hopes to be back playing. And in a couple of moments' time, we're going to chat to Nina Carberry. But Richie, Arsenal just about to get underway.
Yeah, just getting underway. The Wanda Metropolitano 1-1 with Atletico Madrid from last week's first leg. Diego Costa starting up front for the hosts tonight is probably the headline news on that one. And Marseille holding a 2-0 lead over Salzburg ahead of tonight's second leg in Austria. Both games are just, as Nathan says, getting underway. Ulster's most capped player is to retire at the end of this season. Andrew Trimble announcing today he's quitting rugby at the age of just 30. The winger has made 229 appearances for the province and earned 70 Ireland caps following his debut in 2005. Barry Hawkins leads Mark Williams by 2-1 in their World Snooker Championship semi-final at the Crucible. Earlier, John Higgins ended the first session of his semi with a 5-3 lead over Kyron Wilson. Rory McIlroy has shot a solid opening round of 68 at the Wells Fargo Championship. As things stand, he's just a shot off the lead. Peter Maltani, Tyrrell Hatton and Kevin Kisner are amongst those on 4 under par. In fact, they are the leading trio at the moment with McIlroy tucked in behind.
Is that a solid round? You call that a solid round? I'd call that a very good round, no?
Very good round. Very solid, good round, Kev.
Yeah, that good. No, it's good.
He's one off the lead, Richie.
Yeah.
Kev knows what he's talking about golf-wise.
Give him a little bit of credit.
Elsewhere, out on course, Tiger Woods is 1 under through his first 8 holes. Graham McDowell is level par, as is Seamus Power. Shane Lowry, he shot a 3-over par round of 74 earlier on today. Meanwhile, Katie Taylor appears increasingly unlikely to fight in Ireland this year. The WBA and now IBF lightweight champion is yet to fight professionally in Ireland, and her manager today, Brian Peters, told the independent journalist Sean McGoldrick that the climate is not conducive to staging a major fight here. Security concerns and insurance costs are believed to be key factors given the shooting at the Regency Hotel in 2016. Taylor hopes to fight the holder of the WBO belt, that's Rose Valente, in June. Meanwhile, former Olympic and world champion Asbel Kiprop has vowed to clear his name after admitting to failing a drugs test. It's been reported that the 2008 Olympic 1500 metre champion tested positive for EPO in an out of competition test taken in November. But in a statement taken today that is nothing short of explosive, Kiprop maintains his innocence, says the positive test is the result of extortion. Kiprop claims officials gave him prior warning that they would be taking him for a test, something they're not supposed to do. He then says that he was asked to wire money to one of these officials with the result of the test coming because he didn't give the official enough money. Kiprop also goes on to claim he was offered an ambassadorial role within the IAAF in exchange for admittance of guilt. It's the latest drug scandal to rock Kenyan athletics, with the winner of the women's marathon in Rio in 2016, Jemima Sungong, last year banned for 4 years after she tested positive for EPO. This one will run.
Mm. Yeah, seems legit. Good pun there, Richie.
Thank you, Nathan.
All right, Richie will be with us throughout the evening, keeping us up to date with everything that goes on between Arsenal and Atletico Madrid in Spain and all the golf as well. Cheers to that, Richie.
As we race towards the final fence now in the Ladbrokes Irish National, organised confusion coming there on the far side to take it up from Western Tower. Organised confusion over the last in the lead. Nina Carberry, organised confusion in front as they race into the closing stages from Western Tower. Sonny Hill boys staying on Ballincard, but organised confusion waiting for Aftermore and Nina Carberry. Second place for Western Tower, Sonny Hill boys third.
Yeah, that is the commentary of Nina Carberry riding organised confusion to victory in the 2011 Grand National. Nina announced her retirement earlier this week and we're delighted she's on the line now. Evening, Nina.
Evening, how are you?
So that was a great moment, but not as great for Kev as Santavolt in the 7:45 at Bellewstown back in 2009. Tell us all about that race.
I can still remember it. No, he won well that day, and I'd say the lads were fairly happy and I.
Well, he went off 5-2 on. Did you feel the weight of Premier League footballer money on your shoulders as you went off?
I had the pressure on. At least he got his head in front, thank God.
It was a great day anyway, Neil. I said to you, for all the wins that you've had, that one would certainly stand in my mind above any of them, I tell you.
Don't go into any further details, Kev.
That was very good.
So, Nina, how's the past week been? Yourself and Katie Walsh, your sister-in-law, announced within almost 24 hours of each other that you were both deciding to step away from the saddle. And there's been so many glowing tributes, so many warm tributes as well. Have you found it all?
Oh, very unbelievable. Very overwhelmed. And no, it was an unbelievable Punches Town. Never mind our two retirements, but the whole festival, I think, was a massive success. And the amount of stories that came from the whole week, I think it was great to be part of it all. And it was great to end in a winner as well.
When did you make the decision?
A couple of weeks. I was kind of, it was fine during the winter, kind of going to Turles or Flamel on a Thursday and then kind of racing at the weekends. But during the summer, it's pretty tough. It's most days and it's evening racing, and it just wouldn't have suited me. So I just felt if I couldn't give it 110%, it wasn't for me. You know, I've been doing it for all my life, and if I can't do it 110%, that it was just the time to give up. So I just kind of had a chat with myself and I said, no, it's time now. And no, I'm glad the way it finished and we got out in one piece.
When you heard Katie was retiring, did you think, God damn it, she's stealing my thunder? Or had you spoken about it in advance?
I was talking to her on the Tuesday and we were walking a track and I just said to her, listen, Katie, I'm going to finish up on Saturday. And she goes, here's your sister. I'm going to finish up on the winner. So it was brilliant that she had the winner on the Thursday. A spare ride. You couldn't write it. And got up to win a nose on the day. And it was brilliant for her that she was able to finish in Punchestown, you know, and not wait till the likes of a lesser meeting during the summer where, like, your family wouldn't be there or whatever. So, no, it was great for her that she finished on a massive high in Punchestown as well.
Nina, across the course of your career, how have you dealt with pressure? Have you thought of pressure at all? Because so often when I've been racing or when I've been watching racing, it's, oh, Nina's on it in the last now. Nina's on a certain horse in the last. That, you know, he's going to win. Have you dealt with those expectations because of maybe the pressure and how high profile you actually became through the course of your career?
I think if you don't have a bit of pressure under yourself, I think you probably won't perform. So you're better to have a bit of pressure and to know it means something, you know.
Yeah.
So I think riding a winner is the best feeling in the world. And yeah, I'll definitely miss riding a winner now. I'll miss that buzz, and there's nothing quite like riding a big winner at the likes of Cheltenham and Punchestown and all those big festivals in Aintree and stuff. So yeah, I'll miss it a lot. And the pressure makes a difference.
Did you enjoy it then when that was actually being said about you, those words? Because so I've said to you so often, I would have heard it. So did you enjoy it? Would that give it a bit of extra spice? Did you not so much feel the pressure, but was it more of an enjoyment type of thing with you when you heard that said?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, definitely. No, it would be. Yeah, definitely.
You said there about retirement of, you know, you've given 110%. It's been your entire life. It's all you've ever known, really, going out and riding horses. Can you take us back to when you first started then? Because the Carberry name is synonymous with racing greatness in this country. From your dad, Tommy, who sadly passed away last year.
Yeah.
Gold Cup, Aintree Grand National, Irish Grand National in the same year. Riding Lithgow to win two Gold Cups in the National. Then your brother Paul wins the National in 99. Like, you're only 14, 15 when he's winning the National. At that stage already, are you thinking, that's the life for me? Are you that entrenched in horse racing at that stage?
I kind of just came upon it. Didn't really, I suppose I started off pony racing, and that kind of led from pony racing to being an amateur. And I had a good few winners pony racing. I was able to buy my first car and get the insurance from it as well, so that was a big start. And then I was able to drive myself probably to a few yards and kind of get in at a few places. And Gerry Lyons was a big supporter at the start as well, and I had a winner for Noel and Noel Mead, and it kind of went from there, kind of snowballed then. And once you kind of have a few winners for a few trainers, they start to get a bit of trust in you and you can do the job. And obviously my dad was a massive help at the start, like, and my mother. And my mother drove me from Kerry up to Donegal for pony racing, and only for her I wouldn't have got into it. And dad gave me my first 10 rides, I'd say. Didn't ride a winner until I was probably a couple of years later, and so he had the patience to give me the ride. So no, it kind of snowballed after. When you ride a few winners, people get a bit of trust in you, and it kind of goes from there, really.
What was his attitude like when you were a young child then and you were just starting out? Was it very much a case that three lads are going out riding horses, you're coming as well, I'd love them to follow in my footsteps, why wouldn't I want you to do it as well?
Oh, definitely. Like, he he always included me in everything. I remember one day he went for a schooling race. It would have been my first schooling race over hurdles. And Paul was riding one for Noel Mead, and Philip was riding one for my dad, and I was riding one for my dad. And there was a maiden which wouldn't have ran over hurdles before, and there was a handicapper which would have ran over hurdles, so would have more experience. So Dad had me on the maiden, and then they were kind of thinking maybe we should put her on the handicapper because at least it had a bit more experience. Sure enough, came down to the last and turned over, and I got my belly full of the start of jumping out. So I knew after that it was all right. I'd say he kind of thought, well, maybe if she can handle this now, she'd be okay, you know. So I did know what I was letting myself in for. But no, he always tried to put me on the right horses and to keep me safe. But you can never wrap you up in cotton wool that much to keep you aboard.
Is there a style to the way the Carberrys ride horses? Is there something when people look at your family, they go, yeah, definitely a Carberry?
I don't know. I suppose we all have our individual styles. I always tried to mold myself on Paul. I think he was the most stylish rider I've ever seen, and probably the most gifted horseman I've ever seen to ride. And I've always tried to model myself on him. So if I even looked half as good as him on a horse, I think I was doing all right.
Yeah. How did he get that style on a horse? Is that establishing a relationship? Is it having such a deep understanding of a horse that when you get on board, you understand the needs of that horse over the course of a race?
He started off as a flat jockey, so he always had a good seat in him, and he rode quite short as a flat jockey, and I think he brought that to the jumping scene. So it really kind of sexy it up a bit. I don't know, but before it was probably ride long, and you know, whereas Paul kind of brought the shortness back into the game, and it made it look a bit more stylish, and you know, so everyone started to kind of try and be more stylish and be neat, and you know, it probably just brought the game on a bit more.
Mm-hmm. It's been said a lot over the past week or so that yourself and Katie Walsh were real trailblazers for women jockeys, and that people didn't look at you as women jockeys, they just now talk about you as jockeys, and that was part of the real success. But when you were growing up, were there other female jockeys out there that you could look up to, people who could give you advice, people you could see had already forged some sort of a path? Or did you feel like you were a bit of a trailblazer?
No, there was definitely, like, there was a good few amateur girls at the time, and Caroline Hutchison was straight blazing a trail. Joanna Morgan did unbelievable on the flat. Cathy Gannon, all those girls were riding. Obviously, Joanna was a good bit in front of me, but Cathy Gannon was a champion apprentice, and she did unbelievable. No, there was definitely a good few girls doing well at the time, so it helped.
Nina, recently there was a study from the University of Liverpool came out. It was in relation to female and male jockeys, and the study actually found that there was no difference between male or female jockeys, that they were exactly equal given the rides. And it was a very intricate study, but basically that there's no difference between female and male jockeys. Did you ever encounter any sort of discrimination from certain trainers that wouldn't put female jockeys or put yourself on horses? Did you ever count that, or was it just you being yourself and just kind of go out and do the job that you had at hand, I suppose?
Yeah, I don't think I ever came across it, to be honest. I think whoever was putting me up wanted me up. Mm. I didn't go, you know, I think if you're put up, they want you. I don't think you're not going to be, to be honest, I think I got opportunities because I was a girl, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think 99.9% of the time the best horse wins, and if you can steer him in the right direction and if you have the ability to have the racing brain and do it, I think it doesn't matter if you're a girl or a boy, you know. So I think that's kind of going out of it now, like with all these girls coming through, and I think if you can show you can do the job, there's no problem putting you up. They don't care as long as they have an edge.
Mm-hmm. Facilities-wise, is everything geared that we can have a 50-50 split if it was to come to that, if we can get to that sort of level? Because to be honest, I was surprised by the fact that only 11% of professional jockey licenses are currently held by women, and then only half of the rides, so only about 5% are given to women. When you're going around to courses, do you really feel that there is a level of equality there that mightn't even be there in other sports?
Yeah, no, definitely. We're very well looked after. We've got our own change room and everything, and we're very well looked after. There's no bias at all in Ireland in a way, or England. That's what I can talk for. And no, it's there ready to be taken. You know, it's not, but you have to put the work in. And if you're not, like the same for a lad, if you don't put the work in, you won't make it. So there's a lot of work, and maybe a lot of girls don't want to choose to do it. You know, so yeah, it's hard work, and that's it, really. It doesn't really matter if you're a girl or boy to me, anyway.
Yeah, I saw Lizzie Kelly, who was the first woman to win a Grade One over in the UK. She said that within the sport itself, you know, there's total respect from the male colleagues. It's more of an issue that's probably put around female jockeys from the media and people on the outside. Is that fair? Would that be right?
Yeah. Exactly, yeah, they're making more of a deal out of it than the people actually in the sport, because if you can ride a winner and you're getting on well with a horse, there's nothing to say that we can't do, you know what I mean? I don't think there's no difference to me if you can get on well with a horse, you know, you win on it quicker than a man would, do you know what I mean? I don't even like comparing, because I think more or less the horse, if it's good enough, it'll win.
Yeah, you have a new daughter, Rosie, who I'm sure is one of the main reasons that your time has been taken up away from the track at the moment. Over the last couple of years, though, an average summer, how does that play out for you as an amateur jockey in terms of riding 3-4 evenings a week and trying to hold down some sort of a job and have other interests away from the track? What was a week like?
Yeah, like, so it was fine, obviously, up until I had Rosie, and no, I loved every minute of it. I couldn't get enough of it. And just looking at this week, it was Kilbeggan Monday, Ballinrobe Tuesday, Clonmel tonight, and Cork tomorrow. So to me, now looking at it, I was like, I just can't do it, because I've got a job in the morning and then I'd have to go racing and I wouldn't even get to see my kids. So that was a telling point for me. I said, listen, I had to choose. I couldn't keep everything going. So I loved my job in Ballydoyle and I kept that going. And I said, time for me now to move on to something else and look after my little girl and see as much as I can, because you don't get those years back. So I'm just going to buy and sell horses now, and I'll be based at home now, so it's a lot easier.
I was just going to say, what is the thing that you move on to now that you can actually concentrate more on now as you do retire?
Yeah, so hopefully have a few different types of horses to go buying and selling, and hopefully it'll work out. It's never easy in the job, in any part of the horses. It's never easy to make a living, but with a bit of luck, we'll get something back out of it anyway.
So is that buying and selling horses for Ballydoyle, working for Aidan O'Brien?
No. Just work separately, and then you do your own thing in the afternoons, and hopefully buy and sell that way through sales and stuff.
Yeah. You're so deeply involved in horse racing. So you're married to Ted Walsh Jr., who is Ruby and Katie's brother. Like, is there ever a day of your life where horse racing isn't involved? Is there any time at all you can completely
Ted's
switch
very
off?
Good, yeah. He, we don't really talk about horses too much as we can. So, yeah, no, we definitely, Ted loves the surfing and doing other stuff like that. So, no, it's good. He brings out the best of me that way.
Yeah. It sounds like you're very comfortable with your decision, because so often I think when we're talking to jockeys, a lot focuses maybe on the Tony McCoy documentary where he didn't get the dream finale. It goes through the last Cheltenham Festival, the last Aintree Festival, and you're waiting for this big win and it just never comes. And he's left, well, pretty depressed at home, thinking, I should have given it one more year. I just love one more winner. Part
but
of you,
I think
I'm sure
he
was
better off finishing at the top. Like, he didn't finish without being champion jockey, and he finished in one piece. But I think you're probably better off finishing that way, kind of when people want you to ride, and then you feel that kind of, yeah, well, at least I finished and people still want me to ride for them. So it feels better that way than you're kind of out, you know, you're kind of not wanted. You know, I think it's better that you finish being wanted and, you know, I think he's happy now, I think, looking back on it. But probably at the time he felt, you know, what does he do? You know, but I'd say now, if you talk to him, I'd say he'd feel better.
Yeah. Will you go down the training route?
I won't close the door on it anyway, but it is a very hard thing to make it in, with especially training here. Like, it's very, very hard up against Willie and Gordon and obviously Aidan O'Brien and Dermot Well, but if you don't give it a go, you'll never go. But I am not at the minute. Not at the minute. But we'll just see how we go for the next year or two with the buying and selling and see how we go.
Yeah, you're still only 33, so you have plenty of living ahead of you. Are you getting out of it in a good state? Are there a few aches and pains from a few falls? Are you?
No, I'm fine, thank God. Yeah, no, fine. Broke a few collarbones, but they're intact now. So
that's almost like a dismissive thing. That few collarbones, that's standard thing.
That's grand. So when's the big retirement party planned?
Oh God, I'd say we had it Saturday night. Yeah, we had it Saturday night, so we gave it a good kick.
Nina, it's been brilliant talking to you. Congratulations on a wonderful career and enjoy your retirement. I get the feeling it's not the last we've heard from you.
Thanks very much. Thanks for that.
Great stuff. Nina Carberry there talking to us. That'll be up on offtheball.com shortly. It is Atletico Madrid 0, Arsenal 0. Lauren Koscielny has gone off injured though for Arsenal with what looks a pretty bad injury. So that's a big blow to them, but still scoreless in that game. Arsenal, of course, need to score to have any chance of going through. So we'll keep you up to date with that. Kev's going to be watching the game. Graham Hunter coming up on the football show. But up next in a couple of minutes, we're going to hear from Conor Murray and from Josh van der Fleer.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.